Alright, so how do you want to kick it off? That's good.
No, it really isn't.
Go with it.
Go with what? That long, drawn-out, unintentional Robert Barone moment?
Yep.
Alright, there it is. Welcome to CTR.
Alright, I'm down. We're good. We're live.
We are indeed.
Let's do it.
We are indeed live.
It is January 28th, 2012. Big happy birthday shout out to Ariel Winter of Modern Alex, Family.
Also known as Alex, or the middle child of the Claire Phil household. I guess you would call them the Dumfies.
The Dumfies.
Speaking of which, Modern Family's been pretty damn good this year.
I was going to say the same thing. I actually marathoned a little while ago, and it was really... I'm digging it. I thought the whole thing with the Keys episode was kind of lame, because it just made it feel kind of sure like he was kind of a loser, but overall, it was just funny as hell. So, by the way, also a big happy birthday shout-out to our mutual friend Adam P. Jordan.
Former guest of the podcast, and soon to be, I'm sure, guest again on the podcast.
I was about to say, is he, like, banned or something?
Speaking of which, I was going to mention this. I should have mentioned this to you already, but week and a half from now, I think we're going to do it on Tuesday, not this coming Tuesday, maybe next Tuesday. We are indeed going to have author Brian Dull on the show to talk about the re-release of his Solstice book, which is actually going to be released in stores this time, I do believe. He's going to have a date for us, and we're going to talk about the Academy Awards some, talk about some of the higher-level films, things like that. So we're going to have some fun with that, and by then you probably will have seen Moneyball and hopefully The Artist, and we'll be talking about those here in a minute on what's happening. But my name, Jason Martin, his name, Andrew Van, he's in South Carolina, I'm in Kentucky, no big deal.
Technology, that's crazy! We're talking to each other!
Woo!
Oh, also happy birthday shout-out to Alan Alda, and the most important birthday shout-out of all, Joey Fatone. That's right, Adam, you share a birthday with Joey Fatone. Fuck no, you do.
That was some Aziz Ansari shit right there.
It was. He's going to hear it later. He's like, damn it. Oh, and Elijah Wood, what's up? You get a happy birthday shout out too, sir.
His birthday today?
Yes, it is. He's 31
years
old.
It's kind of funny. I totally forgot when I was doing my year-end television blog, and I'll go ahead and give it credit now because
Wilfred.
I completely forgot about Wilfred when I was talking about best stuff of 2011 that didn't quite make the list. It would have been on there. I mean, like, I put Once Upon a Time as the best show that didn't make the list from 2011, and I still agree, but Wilfred, it just kind of was kind of got justified to some extent. Some of the stuff that comes out earlier in the year sometimes gets lost by the end. The same thing happens in movies. A lot of Academy Awards nominations for films that could have gotten noms usually don't if they come out too early in 2011. If it comes out too early, people forget about it by the time the nominations come out. Same thing happens with video game awards and everything else in pop culture. So Wilfred was kind of early. It was kind of over by June. Nobody really talked about it, and then it was over. But it's a really good first season.
By the way, that is coming back, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to make sure. I actually kind of, fell off the wagon like for the last quarter of the season, and I just never really got back on it. So.
Did you ever watch the end of the first season?
I don't think so.
Huh. You should try and do that.
I apologize. But in the meantime, yeah, happy birthday, Elijah Wood. Is he in The Hobbit? No.
I don't think so, because Bilbo, that's Bilbo's story.
He could make like a cameo, like a flashback or something. Or flash forward. By the way, I was reading an article today, something about TV shows that tried to be like the next Lost and like flash forwards on that. I totally forgot about flash forward.
Yeah, you know who else did? Everybody.
Dominic Monaghan.
Yeah, and Elizabeth Mitchell. I think that show, from what I heard, it got better towards the end, but it was too late. Everybody had bailed out. I watched the first two, and I planned to keep watching, and it just didn't happen. But there have been several We Wanted to Be Losts, and I read Doc Jensen in Entertainment Weekly a couple of weeks ago, and he basically asserted that the next Lost will be nothing like Lost. That the only way to really have another Lost is for it just to happen. And that stuff that attempts to be exactly like it, it'll never work. So, and I agree with that. But I also believe that there's never going to be a show like Lost again. And there's probably not going to be a show on network TV that gets that kind of consistent budget that Lost got for as long as it got it.
That's the thing. People need to quit saying this is the next loss, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm just done. Like, loss is loss. You can't touch it. I'm sorry. No. Just, you know, do your own thing and just be yourself. Don't get me all hyped up. Like, when, what was that bullshit a couple years ago or last season? Oh, God, you watched it. You were a huge fan of it. The event.
The event, yeah.
You love the event. You want to get the event. No. You claim this. You were all about it. You wanted to watch that thing to the end. Don't take it back now.
I did watch it to the end, but I'm saying by the end, I wasn't so big a fan anymore.
You tried the mid-season. You were like, no, this is some promise behind this.
Well, when it went to break, I laughed at it because the thing that happened right before it went to its four-month hiatus before it came back for the back half of the season was one of the worst decisions I've seen creatively on television in a long time, and it became kind of a joke. But then I was going to watch it through to the end, and I did like some of the characters, but... Yeah, no, it certainly wasn't lost. Neither was Persons Unknown, even though I actually, as a guilty pleasure, I really liked that show. It was very different, but... And it kind of got put in NBC purgatory also, and a lot of people have never even heard of it. But it at least got its entire first season, and it never was able to come back and didn't have really, I would say, a proper ending, but an ending that at least sort of made sense. Kind of wish it had gone on. Had some of the worst acting ever. But at the same time, it was still a good television program for what it was. It was just a guilty pleasure. It was just pure fun to watch that story unfold because it was so ridiculous.
Kind of like the great acting of, what's his name, Sean Hunter? The guy from
Ritter.
The event.
Jason Ritter.
Uh-huh. Well, he's on Parenthood now. Apparently, he's banging Lauren Graham on the show.
Well, lucky him. He's a better man than me just for that alone.
Oh, here's some of the other shows listed as the next loss that didn't make it. Threshold? When the hell was that out?
Was that years ago?
That was on CBS on 2005, 2006.
Oh.
The Hook, the Lost-esque Hook. Not long after Lost began, every network wanted to be in action. This, bringing together Carla Gugino, and Brent Spiner as members of a government team activated after a strange alien creature pops up beside a Navy ship, which soon begins converting humans.
There's the problem with almost all of these shows right there.
Aliens?
Just said it. Yeah. That's not what Lost was, folks. Lost
it had a mystery. Smoke monster.
Lost was a mystery. It was in the words of Joe Pesci in JFK. It's a mystery wrapped in a riddle circled by an enigma. That's why Lost was lost. There was no alien.
Kind of like the event. But like, they're not aliens.
They even told people, including me, I am people, before the show started that it wasn't going to be about aliens. And guess what it was about? It was about aliens.
Aww.
Actually, they called them ETs.
And then V, obviously, was so totally about aliens,
but I mean, V
that
was
had
remake.
Really hype. Huh?
V was a remake. I mean, the original series is a cult classic, has been for 20 years, so, I mean, it wasn't trying to be Lost, but, you know, a lot of people dug the second season. I watched the first couple episodes of it, and it just didn't stick with it because I had too much other stuff going on, but... I don't really have anything against V. I don't think V was attempting to be anything. I don't think it was attempting to be Lost. It was annoying, though, watching the last season of Lost and at the bottom of the screen a V countdown for the last, like, 4 weeks of Lost, except on the finale night. We got to see when V was going to start every time. That was distracting. And NBC, by the way, take a hint. We know Smash is on the day after the Super Bowl. Please stop taking up the bottom third of my screen with these exorbitant graphics during shows that I actually want to watch on your network, of which those numbers seem to be dwindling, especially now that Chuck's off the air. But yeah, that's annoying. That's got to go.
I like satire there. I liked it when Family Guy made fun of that shit a couple years ago. Can't remember what exactly why they were doing it, but at the very bottom, it was like all these fake shows, and it was like one was called, like, I think, Buddies. Like these two random dudes. All they did was just like, put their shoulders next to each other and, like, bounce off each other and do, like, different poses. Like, yeah, it's pretty sad.
If Family Guy satires, it's probably not something you should be doing on a regular basis as a professional television network.
Unless you're a Community.
Right.
Unless you can pull it off because they're clever.
Yeah.
So. Persons Unknown? Did you watch that?
That's what I was just talking about.
Right.
Remember I told you it didn't have a proper ending? I actually really enjoyed that show. Mm-hmm. Not because it was Lost, but it was just cool, you know, a bunch of people wake up in a hotel in a completely empty town and don't know why. They all wake up or whatever, and they have to try and figure out why they're there. And it turns out they're part of this elaborate experiment that's been going on for centuries in the same way. And all this other kind of stuff's going on. And then there's people that are on the captors' sides and all this, and all of them have relationships and politics and all these other like personal situations, military, in their actual lives that have to continue on through it. So, I mean, there's a lot of, it was just kind of an interesting story. There was seriously, acting on that show was so horrific, pretty much from top to bottom. There were a couple of exceptions, but I thought that just as pure entertainment and as escapist fiction, I just liked it. I'm one of the few, but I really liked it.
What about Dollhouse?
Dollhouse, I watched the pilot. I watched the pilot when it aired, as a matter of fact, and I thought it was pretty good, and it just didn't stick with it. It's something I've actually thought about going back and watching again, trying to actually watch the show since it only was two seasons and it was Whedon, but I just haven't done it yet.
Invasion?
Never watched 1 second of Invasion. Is that on that list?
Yeah. So was Dollhouse, is why I said it. Man, Drive. Nathan Fillion.
I don't know.
I don't even know this. This says 1 season, 6 episodes produced. Here's the Lost-esque hook. And by the way, all this information is coming from Blaster.com, Blaster without the E. Really good site. Check it out.
Sci-fi site.
Based on contestants drawn in a mysterious nationwide auto race, the pitch had potentially been given a buzzy show. That is, if anyone had anything actually seen it. And it was the last show he did before Castle. Sadly, the show didn't last long enough to delve into two deep mysteries behind the scenes. The series also took advantage of some cutting-edge effects technology to transition around cars during the races, eventually winning an Emmy for effects from Eclipse streamed on Fox.com. Why it failed? Blink and you miss one. Creator and former writer of Angel, Tim Minear. Only 4 episodes aired in 2007. Interesting concept or not, if nobody's watching, it's not going to last long. The show received abysmal ratings and was due from day one. That's a shame.
Good news, ladies and gentlemen, is that on today's Certifiable Total Recall, we will not be talking about failed television shows, but in the main topic, which we'll get to, I'd say in about 15 minutes, we will be discussing one of the 5 best shows on all of television in
Stark
any capacity.
Raving Mad.
Not Stark Raving Mad.
Oh, come on.
Not Men Behaving Badly, and not Rob, which I have watched all 3 of the first episodes of.
And
no.
Oh, come on!
There's one problem with Rob.
Cheech Marin.
Rob.
Aww.
Because his acting just ruins it. It's so over the top. You know, it's like, there are similarities, like we talked about a few weeks ago, between Rob and something like Everybody Loves Raymond, or kind of mixed with some other shows, King of Queens, blah, 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 all this. But Rob Schneider can't act, and there's really no way around it. He overacts the jokes. The jokes are telegraphed. They aren't up to speed with some of the other comedies over the past 15 years that CBS has been able to succeed with. However, the ratings are pretty good, and I'm still watching it for now. It's just, and this past one, I will say, the third one, Rob's acting seemed a little bit better than the first two. But the first two, his acting was so bad, it was distracting from being able to just sit back and enjoy the show. And that's something that can't live on for long.
One thing is, though, a lot of series, I mean, a lot of the first 2 or 3 episodes you have to get through. I mean, look at Community, for example. Community is, they didn't really get their niche until, I would say, halfway through season one, when they figured it out. They're not going to be a serious sitcom with, like, a lot of major plot storylines, character, as far as, like, relationships and long delve development. It's just, after the mid-season, they're like, we're just going to have fun. We're just going to entertain, be funny, and just make people remember us for what we are. Not bullshit storylines like a lot of shows and try to force you to get in something that you don't really care about, you know? Like, do you remember there was a time when there was a love triangle with, like, Jeff, Britta, and the dude from Dumb and Dumber, Eric Olsen, something like that?
You're talking about the guitar player.
Yeah, the hacky sack dude.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember that? Like, they actually tried to make, like, regular sitcom storylines before it all got about, you know, the meta and other stuff like that. So, you know, some shows take a while before they hit their stride. You know?
True.
But
there's just
Family Guy's the same way. Family Guy, you know, they had major storylines. The Simpsons, you know, we've all talked about the Simpsons the same way.
3
remember
seasons.
Simpsons? Yeah, you remember Simpsons had, like, the fucking, like, Thanksgiving storyline where Bart was a, you know, bad child or whatever and fucking got, like, homeless for a little bit and then he came back loving his family? Or the episode where, like, he was in France studying? Or not France, but whatever fucking European country?
Yeah, no, I mean, I get what you're saying and I agree with you. I'm just saying that I look at Rob in terms of a potential standpoint, and it's not that the story itself might not have some legs. And I think I do want to keep watching it a little bit and see and give it a chance. And the ratings haven't dropped off terribly. Like, some people are going back to it, and some people hate it with a passion. But I want to see – I don't know how much – talent Rob Schneider has as an actor. I don't have a problem with Rob Schneider. Like, I've always found him somewhat funny at times and everything, but the show relies on him, and he is not Ray Romano. And that's the biggest problem, is his acting is just completely unnatural. And that kind of casts aspersions on the show. But no, I mean, like, Cheech Marin's got some lines. Everything's a little bit too telegraphed. It's like, here comes a joke. Here it really comes. You know it's coming. You know it's coming. And there it is. Like, they don't fool you around or try and – or jokes come out of nowhere. There's no facial expressions that sell stuff right. The way they have in a lot of other comedies. But right. At the same time, I'm not going to give up on a sitcom like this in three episodes. I want to keep watching and see where it goes. I do think, by the way, it's better than the stuff that it replaced. And I think it's probably better than Rules of Engagement, which I've watched the first half of the first season. I just don't think it's very funny.
But the thing is about that is I think people want some balance in TV land. They want that show that is corny and cheesy. And yes, to the blind eye, it's not so choreographed. It's just, I think, more clean comedy as opposed to some stuff we're getting where it's so raunchy and it's raunchy and it's so, I think, when you compare it to 30 years ago, so outlandish to R-rated. You know, it's kind of like the concept we talked about a couple weeks back. Like, if you compare Married to Children to what was, you know, Archie Bunker back in the day, even today, like, Married to Children is not really dirty compared to some of the stuff that's on TV.
No, it's not. Know? I mean, that's, you know, things are becoming more either acceptable or in a positive or a negative sense, depending on your take on it. But I do think there's something wholesome about Rob. I don't think there's a whole lot of, I haven't seen at least a whole lot of things to be worried about from that perspective. So I think that's a good move. It is after the Big Bang Theory, which does have its share of raunch, but as we move into, and you'll hear the sound clip in just a second, as we move into what's happening, I think we'll be talking a little bit about the Big Bang Theory, because I'm quite satisfied right now with where the show's going, because it's finally taken the step that I think it has to take before it just becomes a television show that can rely on its characters and not the drama that surrounds them. So we're going to send it to Coffee Talk with Linda Richman, Mr. Mike Myers. He's going to send us back here in about 2 seconds, and we'll get this thing started.
What ticket?
Oh, what is happening?
It's kind of funny last time because you were laughing out of the sound clip.
Would you like to make a laugh track like we're on fucking Whitney?
No, as a matter of fact, I'm not even sure how those people, if anybody knows they were on the laugh track that's being used for Whitney, I'm not sure that they can actually believe it or understand why it happened. Like, I didn't laugh at that. They're going to go and have press conferences. No, that show's not funny. I didn't laugh at that. I don't want my name associated with this.
Kind of like how people who star in Rob Schneider movies.
With the exception of maybe the first Deuce Bigelow, which kind of had some funny moments.
I mean, yeah, but you're also talking about the guy. I think that's the thing about people who forget that this is Rob Schneider. He's a normal guy compared to his other roles that he's had recently. You know, like Grown Up and Bedtime Stories and Big Stan. yeah, that's right, I brought my Big Stan. Grandma's Boy. Longest Yard.
Was he in Grandma's Boy?
Yeah, he was the landlord at the very beginning.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Kevin Nash.
Right. Oh, my God.
51st Dates. Mr. Deeds, the animal. Can we just stop at the animal?
Can we just stop with the hot chick?
I wasn't even going to mention the hot chick. How about White Chick?
How do you mention the hot... I'm not going to mention the hot chick. After that line of refuse you just finished spitting out to me about those other movies.
I mean the hot chick. Oh, that's what I meant. Oh.
No, White Chicks was the Wayans.
Yeah, I thought he was... I don't know why. Maybe it was all blend... Bad comedies all blend into me. How's that?
But there's your... I bet that's the most Rob talk you will hear on any podcast this month. But, Andy, what's happening?
Nothing much. A couple new shows just came out, right? Let's see. Touch. How's Touch?
Awesome.
Really?
Yes. Thought it was great. It's Tim Kring who created it and who's writing it. Tim Kring, if you don't know, is the guy who created Heroes.
And the first season.
And here's the thing. Yeah, exactly. Here's the thing. When I finished the Touch pilot, I felt the same way I felt after the first two or three episodes of Heroes. It was a show that's got a ton of potential. I like the story itself. In general, I think the casting is strong. If it doesn't turn into a whodunit mystery of the week, it's going to be good. Pilot had Titus Welliver, Man in Black, who's all over the place right now. Kiefer, really liked the character. Like all of it, if you didn't get to watch the pilot event, the show doesn't premiere until March. This was an exclusive premiere for the Western Hemisphere. But you can go to fox.com/touch and watch the show in its entirety at any point over the next month and a half, and I highly suggest that you do so, because as it was getting closer and closer to it, and I saw a few of the actual longer trailers, I became more enthused about watching the show. And I watched it and thought it was fantastic, and critics apparently agreed with me, because I read just a small snippet in a local news article, and they were talking about ratings were strong and the critical response has been really positive, and it did really well on TV by the numbers. So, yeah, it was a win-win for me. I thought it was freaking great. I really liked it a lot.
You remember when we first heard the synopsis for that show?
We joked about it.
We were like, really? And then when I kept seeing more and more of it, you know, I kept thinking of, I was like, is this another, like, version of Early Edition?
Reminds me, it kind of, when I first, I thought it might have a little something to do with Knowing or something like that, you know, like Nicolas Cage.
Right.
And there's some of that, but I just like the way it's set up. I like the fact that that kid has never spoken a word since his birth. And that people think he's just, you know, autistic and completely blind to the world and whatever, and he has this brilliant skill. But the thing about it that makes it cool is the fact that the number that he came up with or whatever for the pilot intertwines into five or six other side stories that you get to watch play out. Like, you get to see these flashbacks of these, like, seemingly unrelated characters. One of them's like a terrorist cell in Iran. And then you've got, like, Japanese schoolgirl prostitutes. And then you have a guy who's lost his cell phone halfway across the world. A hopeful singer who sings in a club who ends up on a phone somewhere else in the world and all this stuff. And it all relates to the same set of numbers. And the entire story has a good mix to where you find out what the kid's motivation is and why he has this skill and all this other kind of stuff. And it's a good revelatory moment. When you see the mystery itself for this episode start to unravel, it's cool. And then the whole thing based off this, you get a monologue from the kid, which I guess would have taken place in his head, that opens up the show for the first 2 minutes. And you see him describing numbers and the Fibonacci sequence and things like that. And he talks about the red thread of fate that's around the ankles of every single person on the planet. And that thread is, you know, then moves to the next person that you're supposed to touch at some point in your life and all this. It's like you can never remove the thread from your ankle, but sometimes you can move it around or whatever like that and shift where it's going to go and things like. It's just a really cool idea, and I thought it was executed well. Cinematography and editing were strong. And Kiefer, you know, Kiefer's at home on Fox, and he looks at home in the Martin Baum character that he's playing on this show. And this was definitely better than, I mean, I feel embarrassed now to have joked about it without really understanding fully what the show is going to be. But yeah, if you agree with my taste in television or want to see something that I think has a real future, especially with some of Fox's other longer-running dramas starting to flatline, I think Touch is going to be around for a while. It looks like it's got a really strong foundation to be really good for the network.
I heard an interview with Kiefer Sutherland with Ryan Seacrest on a ride home this week. And I remember he was like, oh, I got, you know, I was working on Broadway. And I was like, wait, when was Kiefer Sutherland on Broadway?
Maybe he was in Spider-Man.
Well, he's not dead, so I guess he's not. But he's like, oh, I was on Broadway. Then my agent came up to me. He's like, hey, I got the script. I was like, you really need to read it. And he's like, I don't know if I want to do TV. I'm just not ready. And this is like, what, a year? He said after, you know, 24 just ended. And they said, by the way, 24 apparently is going to start filming somewhere in April.
Yeah, I saw
and
that.
He couldn't really say anything except for that Alicia Cuthbert will be maybe most likely in it. Oh, and then he didn't say Chloe's real name, but he said, oh, and Chloe. There's definitely room for her. I was like, how good of a character are you when you have the name drop the character's name, not her real name, Mary.
Marilyn Rescombe.
Mm-hmm. Who, by the way, is really funny Twitter. Just
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, no, she's cool in general. Like, she was awesome when she was on Mr. Show. When she does, like, interview appearances, she's funny. But, yeah, her Twitter is a laugh riot.
But he's like, okay, I'll read it. So he reads it, and then he says pretty much what he says in any show. He's like, ah, damn it. Because he liked it that much. He's like, all right, I have to be part of this.
There were a couple of moments when he was on the phone early in Touch when I was waiting for him to go, disarm the bomb, damn it. But it never came.
Beer go!
But yeah, in terms of I love Kiefer and I'm glad to have him back on television, but I think this show does have a future. This is a show I would give a recommendation for anybody out there to go to fox.com/touched and watch the pilot. And then again, it doesn't come back on until I think it's March 18th when it's going to actually premiere, and it'll be on every Monday from that point on. But it just, it came out of the gates right. It's a pilot that they knew what they were doing. They advertised it during all these ridiculous ratings champion football games over the last, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, and NFL's been breaking records left and right. So I think that that certainly helped it out, but Kiefer didn't pick a dud. This is a good script, and Tim Kring, who we both really like and hate what happened to his vision of Heroes, this show has a Heroes feel to it in a lot of respects. But maybe with a little bit more heart and a little bit more foundation.
So what would you say has a better character between this character, Jack Bauer, or him as Athos in Three Musketeers in 1993?
I was waiting to see where you were going to go, if you're going to go with the Lost Boys or Flatliners or... But you went with that, and I'm going to go with Jack Bauer.
Oh, come on.
I'm not playing your little game.
What about the caller in Phone Booth?
I did like the caller, especially those, like, turtle-rimmed glasses.
It was crazy. I thought the entire movie, it was Willem Dafoe's voice. And then when he shows up at the end, I'm like, wait, what? So,
keeping me at the job, man. Leave him alone.
That disappointed me. But, man, seriously, speaking of Phone Booth, man on the ledge.
Yeah, you and I agree. And guess what? Rotten Tomatoes?
Every single person is calling it Phone Booth. I'm like, I saw that from the trailer.
So,
I don't think it's going to be as bad.
It's worse.
Really?
18% on Rotten Tomatoes. The best, and the reason I read it is because I didn't know if I wanted to see it, so unless it got good reviews, I wasn't going to waste my money. There's enough good things that I do want to see, but there was one particular line that I found funny from, I think it was the Newark Star-Ledger. The guy said, Sam Worthington and the film industry need to just shake hands and go their separate ways. I was like, whoa, ouch, guys. But yeah, apparently it is a dismal piece of crap, which I thought it would probably be passable at least. I didn't expect it to be panned this badly, but yeah, it's kind of a living joke right now, which Phone Booth was better received than that. I actually kind of liked Phone Booth.
Wow, we have similar tastes, huh? We have similar tastes, my ass.
On some things, you have some terrible decisions too.
Like what?
I don't know, I have to think.
Exactly. Exactly. You got nothing.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Not right a second. I'd have to think about it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Keep it to yourself.
Workaholics.
Yeah. What?
A lot of people are telling me that I need to be watching that show and it's really funny. I just can't do it.
I'm trying to catch up on The League. I think The League is growing on me.
League's good. I just wish it wasn't so raunchy. I don't think that it needed to be. I just hate some of the language that they use, some of the terminology. Women's anatomy words that I've always disliked, things like that they just overdo. But the show's really good. I haven't fully caught up on it either. I'm planning to do so because, well, I'm in sports broadcasting now and everybody's talking about The League all the time. So
you can definitely tell. You can definitely tell it's one of those shows where you can tell just that cast has so much fun just doing what they do, and they let them ad-lib a lot of times, especially with Taco.
Right.
There was one line where he's talking about how it's like, girls who drive Volkswagens are always hot. It's like, how do you know women drivers who drive Volkswagens are hot? It's like, because I did a study downtown, and I found that 80% of women are hot. I'm like, how the hell did you do this? Like, I dress like a homeless man and just pander. And they're like, well, Panhandle's like, why did you dress like a homeless person? Because normal-looking people won't pay me money.
Wow.
Like, what? So, it's great. So Men on a Ledge, I want to make some time tonight to watch The Artist and apparently Moneyball in one night. I've got a marathon thing. I'm going to need some coffee. I got this.
That's
going
to be a good night for you. I was able to
do this.
I was able to do that with The Descendants and The Artist, and it was tremendous. And then I unfortunately went and watched Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
And I heard that was a sleeper movie,
was
no?
I was really, really disappointed, personally. And I you're right. I mean, what you've heard is correct for what people have been saying about it. And I love Firth. I love Oldman. So many people in that movie that I really enjoy. But that film bored me to tears. It was so dry. It was intentionally vague and confusing. By the time it ended, it was just like, okay, And then Oldman gets nominated for Best Actor Academy Award this week. And I'm happy for that because I love Gary Oldman. And he was terrific in the film. I just hated the movie. I just didn't like it. A lot of people, I mean, most everybody has loved the film that has gotten a chance to see it. It just was not for me. And maybe I'd built it up too much. I was so excited about it. Had been for a long time. It just, I left very disappointed from that movie. And I saw The Iron Lady right before that. That film's average. Meryl Streep's incredible. She deserves her nomination. Thatcher's one of my two favorite politicians of the last century, along with Reagan, which doesn't should surprise nobody who knows me, because they were very similar in the way that they governed and things like that. But it wasn't a great Thatcher biopic by any stretch of the imagination. The story itself was kind of lame. Jim Broadbent was good and Streep was fantastic, but not a very good movie. Very good performance is about all I could say for it. But in terms of the artist... Artist is out of this world. It's so good, so unique. It's something that you have not seen unless you're 80 years old. And even then, you wouldn't anticipate that they're able to take the silent film era and do it the same way it used to be done, and then be able to turn it into a contemporary story with contemporary motifs in this society, things that would have been way taboo 70 years ago, and tell this beautiful story with one of the all-time, seriously, one of the all-time just happiest and best orchestrated scores ever. Borsa, who won the Golden Globe, is a shoe-in, at least in my opinion, to win the Academy Award, because that film demands the music that it had. But it was great. Everybody in the world should see that movie. It's so fun. You leave with a smile on your face. You leave wanting to dance. It's just one of those kind of experiences that you can only have with a good movie. There's nothing to dislike at all about that movie. None of the people in it. Cromwell's great, Goodman's great, Penelope Ann Miller's great. It's something that you just wouldn't experience. I wasn't even sure any movies would do anything this unique, and I hope that doesn't cost it, because if it wins Best Picture, I have no problem with that. If The Descendants wins Best Picture, no problem with that either, which I got to see last week and thought was just out of this world great. George Clooney, I think, will probably win. If he doesn't, Desjardins or Brad Pitt, I think, are the other two that most people are talking about right now. And both of them would be certainly great choices. Moneyball was awesome, and like I said, The Artist is out of this world. So, but I think Clooney will win for The Descendants, which is Alexander Payne's best movie, and Sideways is incredible, so that's really saying something. And Election's really good, too. About Schmidt's really the only thing he made that didn't really, to me, live up to expectations. But The Descendants and The Artist, two movies out right now that I think everybody should see. And now that The Help is on Blu-ray... everybody should definitely go out of their way to see that. Those are the three best films that are nominated outside of Harry Potter, which, of course, got snubbed, no surprise. And then Moneyball is right there with them. Those four movies are four movies, I think, that those are the kind of movies people should own. Those are the kind of movies you can go back to and rewatch for very different reasons. But Jonah Hill got nominated for an Academy Award for Moneyball. That's all you need to know. That's how good that movie is.
I heard Pitt got snubbed in Tree of Life.
He got nominated for Moneyball.
So it can't be too greedy, huh?
And Tree of Life's kind of one of those either you love it or hate it kind of movies. People that loved it love it because it was Terrence Malick. People that hated it because it was basically all music and it was 2 hours long and they thought it was just this art piece. I have it sitting in front of me right now. I rented it. Have not seen it yet. I've got to be in the right mood because I have a feeling I may hate it, to be honest, because I think it may be a lot more style than anything else. But Moneyball, The Help, The Descendants, The Artist, those four movies are just really, really spectacular in their own way. But yeah, you can't nominate Brad Pitt twice for the same thing.
Speaking of love it or hate it, pretty sure no one can really hate the show that is part of our podcast subject of the day, and that would be...
Oh, that would be Justified. Real quick, though, before we get to it, I did want to speak to Chuck just for a second. Can't talk about it all because you haven't fully finished yet, so I can't talk about the finale, except to say I am really torn on how I feel about the finale. It was 2 hours, and there were some very hard moments to watch. Everything that you think that Chuck should be, everything that you've seen for the past 5 years in terms of the way they have these perfect resolutions, for example, Chuck versus the Ring last year when he proposes to Sarah, and all those kinds of things. There's always these situations where Schwartz and Fedak have these perfect endings that leave you feeling really good. Well, Chuck ends in a way that is completely opposite of that. And in the last three episodes of the series, they decide to take one of the three main characters on the show and completely change everything about what's happened over the past 5 years in one fell swoop.
Yeah, Sarah.
And there's no resolution the way that you would... there's no real full resolution. It's left up to the audience. And it brings me to this thought. The one really cool thing, by the way, about the finale is they have all these callbacks and scenery callbacks and stuff to things from the past, like Wienerlicious pops up and all these other kinds of things pop up in a different way. They're really well executed, and you get some really great moments from Jeff and Lester and Big Mike. Everybody has their moment. All the inside jokes that the Chuck fans have seen for years and talked about, you and I have talked about some of them. A lot of these things pop up in a really funny way and are really well executed. A lot of people have good endings to their stories, but one in particular doesn't, and it just happens to be the main one. But it brings me to quickly question. I think that a lot of times showrunners and TV producers and writers outthink themselves on finales because they want to do something memorable and something that maybe isn't what the show's known for to really surprise people at the end. At the end of Chuck, there's something that I want from Chuck because of what Chuck has always given me. And they give me something else. And then I read a long article with Chris Fedak and Josh Schwartz that Alan Sepinwall had done leading up to the finale. I didn't read any of the comments on what other people thought of the finale. I just read this interview, which was a 5-part interview and then a postmortem after the finale, just so I could hear their thoughts on all 5 seasons. Each part was about 1 season and some of their favorite moments and some of the reasons a lot of the things happened. It's a brilliant interview. I may post the link actually on our site. But when they got to the finale and they asked, you know, Alan asked the question that we don't get the answer to at the end, and the answer that Fedak gives is very satisfying, and I liked it, but that's not something that can be extrapolated just from watching the source material. So you're kind of in a situation where if you don't read that interview, either you like what they do because of its ambiguity, or so that you can kind of, well, I think this happened. But Chuck doesn't, in my opinion, need to be a show that didn't close that final stanza out. So that bothered me a little bit. But in general, the show was good in terms of the finale, and so was the last season. There was some cheesy stuff and some stuff where they were clearly just trying to do fan service. But it's kind of funny because they did fan service a lot during the 4th season, and then almost all of this season, fan service, fan service, fan service. And at the very end, they go the opposite direction, which is just weird because we can give examples. I'm sure you could as well, where the finale changes a lot of what you think about the show because they're trying to be extra clever, and it somehow leaves you a little unfulfilled. Sopranos is probably the biggest example. People, you know, still talk about that, and well, the biggest example for the two of us would be Lost, too. I mean, I love the finale, but it's one of the most polarizing episodes of television ever, and then you look at stuff like St. Elsewhere and Newhart and all these things during the year, or all these things ever, you either have a love or hate it situation because things were done that were so off kilter or there wasn't a full-on conclusion. So it leaves you kind of in a situation where it's just like Chuck was never a show where it left stuff up to the audience at the end. It's like, just finish the story because the story has that. If I had that moment, then it's perfect. Like, that's the lasting impression I want. And I have it in my head because I know that that's kind of where they want the audience to think. But I wish we could have just seen it happen. So I was a little bit – I'm still kind of torn on it, but I really enjoyed it. And it was a terrific show. And Andy gets all the credit for finally getting me to watch it after season 3. And I had a blast watching it live for the last 2 years. And it's a show I'll treasure for a long time. And it's another one of those shows that you're probably not going to see anything like that ever again in terms of that kind of cast, that kind of chemistry – that kind of, you know, pop culture reference with geek humor and all this, plus this, at the end of the day, Chuck is a love story. And it's executed in a way that is never so overly annoying in most facets. The only time that was sort of annoying was season 3 when they were dragging out the before picture. But, so there's the Chuck finale. It was good, and I talked to you a little bit off the air, so I'm not going to say much about it, but Mark Helgenberger leaves CSI this week, and they did it really, really well. I don't know how long that show has left, but Ted Danson was a good choice. Love his Russell character. Most of the other people are still there. Still trying to figure out what's going on with Sarah and Gil because, well, Sarah's been working at CSI now for 2 years, and Gil's apparently overseas, and somehow they're still together. They just don't answer it and let it go. But
or they could just like let go of Georgia Fox finally.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I wanted to see him and get her and Gil just get married on the show or whatever.
I mean, has she straightened up? Because I heard for the longest time, like, her and Greg had, like, a huge, not Greg, but, you know, the guy who plays Greg.
Her and George. No, it was her and a guy who played Nick.
Right. Had, like, a huge problem, like, always showing up late for work, never really working well. But all of a sudden, like, I've heard, like, maybe that's turned around. Like, Georgie's actually knows what the hell he's doing and straightened up a little bit. And from what I can tell from you, like, he actually gets more airtime now.
So. He's been kind of the main guy for the last couple years, really. He's kind of the driving force behind everything. Like, there's bigger technical stars on the show, but the Nick Stokes character is the one that the audience, I think, is supposed to relate to. But the fact that CSI has been on for 13 years is a huge achievement in this generation of television. The fact that it's been able to keep a lot of its cast for that long, I don't blame Marg, though. She's been on forever. She's a beautiful woman, really talented woman. It's probably time for her to move on and do something else. But I think they wrote her off in a really good way, a way where she could pop up again, you know, once in a blue moon, here and there. But the Catherine Willows character was a great character for television. That show's been solid for a long time. It is, its best days have been past it for 4 or 5 years, at least. But still plugging along, and I'm interested to see what they try and do now. But it's a show I don't watch on a weekly basis anymore. It's a show I watch when I know that there's something going on with one of the characters. So, there it is. Now, a show that I do watch on a weekly basis would be the one that's going to be the crux of our main topic today. And earlier I was talking about Linda Richmond. Actually, that's not the quote you heard. You heard, of course, Ray Romano from Everybody Loves Raymond. So now I'm going to send it to Ms. Richmond because it's time to get to our main topic and talk a little bit about Harlan County, Kentucky.
Talk amongst yourselves. I'll give you a topic. The Romanesque church design was based on the Roman basilica. Discuss.
Hard times to come.
Are you going to play like a clip or something right there at that spot?
No, that was the Linda Richmond clip right there. We're back. We are back. That was me singing the last piece of the... who is the band that does the Justified theme song that everybody's talking about now?
I have no idea.
Who is it? Gangsta Grass. That's it. All right, Justified, FX. First season, a lot of... First season was a lot of Mystery of the Week stuff with this one underlying story of U.S. Marshal Raylan Givens and his kind of Joker in a certain way. Walton Goggins, who plays Boyd Crowder. And the show was still trying to find its niche. It was still really good, and there were some great week-to-week episodes, particularly the one involving the dentist.
That's one of my favorite Alan ones. Rock. I think that one's one of my favorites just because the show's – I don't know. There's something about it that – there's something about the show, in every episode, there's so much, not just drama, but there's a good balance between drama, action, and then comedy at the same time. And that one particular episode, like, the reasons why Alan Ruck's on the run, and then just the lines between him and Raylan, Timmy Oliphant, a lot of times, is just really stupid. Like, the whole, he wants to confess before he dies. He's like, you know why I became a dentist? He's like, I don't really care, but go ahead and tell me. He's like, you ever watched Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? He's like, it's been a while. He's like, you know the little elf? He's like, oh, you mean the little gay dude? He's like, talking about Hermes. He's like, he wasn't gay. He's talking about that's what inspired him to be a dentist. But season one had a lot of good, and season two from that had a lot of like those like filler episodes. And sitcoms normally have a problem with this where, yeah, like How I Met Your Mother. You have your main story, your A to B plot, we're like, yes, this is the story of How I Met Your Mother, A, and this is how we're going to get to it, B. And then in between there, you have your major storylines, love storylines, baby storylines, family storylines, dating storylines. But then occasionally you have your filler episodes, like The Playbook and Naked Man, stuff like that. No exception to Justify, where they sometimes forget that the main purpose of Raylan being in Kentucky and then having to, you know, deal with Boyd Crowder and then eventually season two with that other family, Mags and her group, and then season three, which is basically going to be content with, I guess, Neil McDonough and eventually Bubba Gump.
Well, it's funny, when I was watching The Descendants and The Artist a couple of weeks ago, during the pre-show stuff that they now show, whether it's, I don't know what it's called now, the 20 or whatever that they show for 20 minutes before the movies come on, they did a Justified segment where they talked to Walton Goggins, who plays Boyd Crowder, and he was saying, this season's going to ramp it up. It's going to be the ultimate season thus far, because there's now three bad guys. There's three baddies, and then he looks at the camera real quick and winks, and he goes, and Boyd Crowder's the baddest of them all. And love me some Walton Goggins. Great on the Shield, and I've just his character, Boyd Crowder character, is just one of my favorites of this decade or this century. Love him. But there's three different ones. There's organized crime, the mafia, and that's your Neil McDonough stuff. And then there's Bubba Gump, Michael T. Williamson, who's, I guess, kind of mixed in both sides. And then there's obviously the Crowders and all the situation that's going on there. So there's three different sets of villainry going around mixed up with Art and Raylan and all the stories that go on in Lexington and Harlan and everywhere else. So they're kind of expanding it out a little bit, because last year was more centered on the Bennetts and the marijuana and the weed business and all the things that they were doing, and the whole stopping the dirty coal and all that they brought in Rebecca Kreskoff for about halfway through the year. So they did that. And in the first season, they just kind of had Raylan and Boyd dealing with each other in different ways until the season finale of season one. And to me, that's when the show really changed, when they had their little standoff at the end or whatever, and you kind of saw them on the same side of the law for the first time. And then from that point on, when Justified came back for season two, it wasn't a show that relied on a crime a week. It's a show that went for a full season. And that is what, when I was saying earlier about Touch, saying that show doesn't need to become a mystery of the week, that's what I'm talking about. Touch needs to be like Justified is now, to really be the kind of show I think that can make the impact that it wants to. But Justified, once it broke through, there's really been, there are shows that I rated higher than it on my end of year or whatever, but if you make my top five, you're a show in the stratosphere, and Justified did so. And when it's at its best, which it has been now for over a season, it is really hard to find better television.
There's something about the standoffs in each one of the shows when they get to that climax. I just really – there's something about the pacing of the show too. Like, you know that something's coming and you get all excited, and then when it happens, you figure it's going to go one way, but then it just totally catches you on another guard. And I got to say this different note real quick on the show. Who do you say had a better guest appearance? Mickey Jones, also known as, what was his name? From K&B.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about. The marijuana buyer, Dwayne from K&B Construction Company. No, it's Big Pete, man.
Or Desmond Harrington, also known as, which I thought was such a stupid name and niche, but Fletcher the Ice Pick Nicks. I'm like, really? Also known as Quinn from Dexter.
I thought it was cool. Like, when I saw Quinn, I'm like, man, are you going to make it past one more? No, you're not. But I guess I'd go with the Quinn thing, because I like the whole put the gun on the table stab thing.
That was funny, but man, that hat had to go. I was like, I can't stand looking at you in that hat.
It's like that leather hat. It's like, what'd you buy that, $7 at Kroger next to where they have the leather jackets?
Something. It's just like, God, you look like such an ass, and you know you're going to get shot, and I just can't wait for that scene. But that scene was awesome.
One of the things you were just saying, I was reading an interview with Graham Yost. He's the guy who created the show and helped develop it. He's also the guy who developed the first Speed, as well as Boomtown. But he was saying that what they wanted from the show was this continuous sense that never left the viewer. And as soon as I read this, I said, well, damn, you got it then, because it's the way I've always felt, which is a mixture of this lighthearted comedy banter, this lighthearted, just like characters that are really fun to watch, and this constant feeling of unease, because you're constantly in a little bit of fear, because the way that they design stuff is like, there's always a precarious situation around crazy other stuff. And I think that they succeed really well, because you get really great stuff, even in this past episode with Art, you know, talking to the guy who ended up taking out the marshal. And talking to him about reptiles and, what do you feed them, mice? And all kinds of stuff like that. On top of this segment where you know what's coming, and you know that these two guys are probably going to end up in a standoff, yet they're having all this really great banter beforehand. So if that's what Yost was wanting, and apparently it is, then they succeeded in spades, because there are some just exceptional moments of both. There's some really hard stuff to watch, and then there's some stuff that's just hilarious and really memorable, particularly to me. The first scene of this season, which it's only two episodes in, but Boyd and Raylan one-on-one acting which I wrote and tweeted that was the best one-on-one acting scene I'd seen since Rooney Mara and Jesse Eisenberg opened The Social Network. The banter was so good, dialogue was so good, and then ending with them going through the glass pane and looking over at Art, I just thought that scene was fantastic.
I think there's always an episode with Art every season that just stands out for him, and I think this past episode where he, you know, took the guy who killed his friend, whatever, and, you know, tied him up, and it was like, this is going to end one of two ways. Either you're going to tell me what I want to know, or I'm going to start shooting holes behind you and tell them that you shot at me and I got you. So, and then that episode was really good because it kind of shows like how past the breaking point Art would go. But then also the episode from last season where he's chasing down the old fugitive that he's been like trying to catch for
the
years.
The air tank and all.
Yeah, that show was so terrible.
Yeah, it really was.
He's like running after him.
Nick Searcy is awesome anyway. I've loved him for so long. Nick Searcy, by the way, who was the star in the Herman Cain political ad a few months ago. He was part of the Herman Cain committee. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love his character. It's been really good. The show is a work. Well, it's based off the work of Elmore Leonard, who's a crime novelist, maybe the most famous crime novelist of the 20th century, who's still writing. Actually, he's got a new book coming out called Raylan. Big surprise there. But Justified was originally called Lawman. I'm glad they changed it.
Ugh.
Nothing wrong with Lawman, but I like Justified.
Yeah, there is.
They used Lawman in the pilot episode. If you go back, the pilot episode is called Fire in the Hole. That's right. Also the name of the short story that Elmore Leonard originally wrote about Raylan Givens. But Elmore Leonard has written some great stuff that's been done in Hollywood, and he thinks that Justified is the best use of his work ever done. And I would agree, although a lot of his other stuff's been good. He wrote 310 to Yuma. He wrote Jackie Brown. Quentin Tarantino obviously adopted that. He wrote Out of Sight, which Steven Soderbergh cast George Clooney and a young Jennifer Lopez in. Like, he's done a lot of stuff throughout his career, and he's continuing to do it again with Raylan and all, but he's become kind of an... Oh, he also did Get Shorty. I don't want to forget about that, which, of course, was also done. So he's done all these great things, but he's now saying that, you know, Justified is the best representation of his work. And, it makes me want to read his stuff. There's actually a new app now for iPad and iPhone that's an Elmore Leonard app where you can read some of his old books as he's trying to prepare people for the release of Raylan. And you can read some of Fire in the Hole and a lot of these other things. And I downloaded it, but I haven't actually gone to the app since I got it. But kind of interested in reading some of that stuff going forward. But Justified is just a great show about a lawman that kind of has to deal with... I don't know what you would say. He kind of sometimes oversteps his bounds. The reason he ends up in Harlan, which is where he was born, even though the show really takes place in Lexington, is a shooting that takes place in Florida, which you get to see at the beginning of the pilot, that you can kind of understand why he did it. He was justified. There you go. So it's kind of simple, but it's effective. And Oliphant, I can't think of anybody else being Raylan Givens after watching him.
Is it me or do they mention that too much, that opening scene? Like, it's been 3 years now. Is it that significant? Because they keep bringing it up, and just kind of, I don't know. Either just trying to allude to it coming back and biting him in the ass even more, or maybe, I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to get. Do you kind
of
get it?
Yeah, I think that they mentioned it because a lot of these other criminals that are coming in from outside, particularly organized crime, know the story of Raylan Givens assassinating or basically killing somebody on top of a building in a penthouse. Whatever like that, so it kind of comes back up. But I think it also pops up because people are trying to watch this show now that haven't gotten to watch it from the beginning. So if you throw that in here and there, it kind of gives them an anchor to where they can understand some of why Raylan exists in front of them right now, even though they haven't gotten to see it play out. So it kind of enables you to watch the show from where you are rather than feeling completely lost as to what's going on. I think there's probably some of that at least.
Oh, and what the hell is up with Jerry Burns' face? Like, his eyebrows, just, come on. Really? can we over-exaggerate that whole thing? He looks like a fucking witch.
I mean, look. Oh, goodness gracious.
Look at Corey Pinkert, and look how huge his ass chin is. That has to be done for that character, I would assume. Otherwise, he's just aging really badly.
He may be aging that badly.
I don't know. Just, I don't remember him looking like that crazy in the last season. Or maybe I missed something. But to me, last season, he just looked normal Jerry Burns. All wind up, he just, you know. Because I'm looking at other screenshots on IMDb, and he doesn't look terrible.
Love me some Jerry Burns. I've loved him since a sitcom that used to run 9:30 on Thursday nights on NBC called Dear John that starred Judd Hirsch and some other people that have gone on to do pretty cool things. But, yeah, Jerry Burns not only does this, he's also on Breaking Bad and has been for 2 years. And he's done some other really good guest roles on stuff. Pretty much love everything
He's up been on Burn Notice, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been on it all this season. He was the main villain, who still is the villain going forward. He may be the best villain the show's ever had. Like, every time he was on screen, he was great. The way that they designed his character and the fact that you find out he's the guy who was really behind everything that's taking place on the whole show and everything, some really cool stuff.
See, I didn't know him on Dear John. I knew him off of...
You're probably too young for Dear John, to be honest.
Something So Right. Yeah, you are pretty damn old. But Something So Right, that's what I knew him from ABC back a long time ago.
See, I never watched that, but like if you were on IMDb and you were under his name, you'd see Dear John. I'm trying to think when it was on, but I think it came on after Cheers, and this was Cheers like right around the time that Kirstie Alley had been on the show for a couple of years, and it was a really cool show. Dear John was a really interesting show, but yeah, if you didn't, you would have, and I was maybe too young to really get all of the jokes, because a lot of it was about, it was basically a support group for people who's others had left them. And Kirk was a womanizer, and Kirk was who Jerry Ryan played, and he was Kirk, and he was kind of a slick dressed guy who talks like Jerry Burns. But yeah, the Win Duffy character is awesome. One of the best lines in the first one was like, "Love to help you, but I've got to go back and watch more women's tennis." Yeah, Win Duffy's been cool, and I'm glad that they're finding a way to keep him around. Really cool, by the way, that they got rid of Winona's ex-husband.
Oh God, Gary?
Yeah.
Well, he may pop up here and there, no? Or
maybe, but
he's not needed.
Next time he pops up, he'll be killed. Which you want to bet?
Yeah, I would hope so. He's not needed, I don't think so.
And Karen Sisko showed up for one appearance. Gotta appreciate Karen Sisko. Karen Sisko is Carla Gugino. She was on a show where she was a marshal called Karen Sisko.
I know, but I'm trying. She's coming back this next episode.
Yeah, I'm sure she's going to be around a little bit more.
I'm trying to think. Boy Crowder and Dickie. Good Lord. Was he going to shank Dickie in that first episode?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he was. He
didn't not even like a thought. Like, yeah.
He didn't care.
Yeah. Getting beat up by the brother so he can go get locked up next to him?
Just the whole deal. Just all of it. And another genius moment that the show does where they put Raylan there in the interrogation room, but to talk to the criminal. And he sits there and he's talking to him because he's figured out that the reason Boyd's in jail is because he intentionally got that fight started to make sure he could get in there where Dickie was being kept. And then gets into solitary with help from another one of those guys that every time he plays anything, he's a bad guy. The guy that played the guard that kind of let him in.
We don't know that he's a bad guy. He's just...
prison guard.
Well, it's not saying he's bad. He's just saying that he likes getting paid, maybe.
Okay.
So whatever.
Kind of too bad they had to kill off Mags Bennett, because Margo Martindale was so good. And it's hard. They've been...
Shit, all the Bennett's are dead except for damn Dickie.
Jeremy Davis is like, please keep me on. I keep getting a paycheck for a couple more weeks. He is going to die, though. You just know it.
Yeah, whether it be by Boyd's hand or Raylan, someone's going to kill him. So
I'm interested to see what happens to Boyd now that he's out of jail. I think it's also interesting how Ava's character has changed, because now she seems to be all good with the criminal thing.
No shit. She just like has no morals anymore. She's all good.
Even when she deals dude in the face with the pan.
Mm-hmm.
With the frying pan.
That was pretty badass.
She just didn't care. Like, she seemed to be on the right side of the law when she was betting up Marshall Givens, but now she is Bonnie and Clyde. She's Bonnie to Boyd's Clyde.
Kind of glad they dropped the whole religion thing with Boyd.
I think it was cool. I think it was cool because you were wondering whether or not it was fake or real, and you kind of come to the realization he was trying to think that it was real. But at the end, he realized he was still Boyd Crowder.
You can't fight who you are, kind of thing.
So I think it was cool the way it was done. Plus, when you've got somebody as talented as Walton Goggins, I just loved listening to him do dialogue about religion. because of how fast and how rhythmic he speaks. It's just in the actual words that they use in terms of what they choose for him to say. It works tremendously well. I don't think that storyline would have been nearly as good without him, but Boyd Crowder has been so good since the very beginning. Even the stuff last year I really loved was whole deal where basically he was part of the plot in the coal mine and outsmarted them all. Blew them up or whatever with the detonator back in the truck. All that stuff was so well done and just showed a little bit more depth to Boyd. And there's that whole situation where if Raylan wasn't a marshal and Boyd wasn't a criminal, they'd be best friends. And you can kind of see that every time you see them on screen. It's like, that's why I call him Batman and the Joker, but the difference is, it's more like Batman and the Catwoman, but without the sex.
You hope not.
I hope not what?
I think that would totally change the dynamic of the show.
If there was sex, yes, that would...
Between Boyd and...
Raylan, that would be a problem.
That'd be weird.
Not there's anything wrong,
nothing
with,
wrong
it.
With that. No, rather than wrong with that. No, exactly.
Yeah.
But,
I like Natalie Z, and I don't want her to go anywhere. I love her.
Oh, even if she's going to get a little bigger? It's all good, right?
Whatever, man. Just, I got plenty of old pictures.
Here's the thing, though. They justified the really good job with symbolism of good needs evil, evil needs good. Like, there's just no spurring of either one from each other. And
it's also the idea of what would Raylan do without Boyd and without those criminals, which is what you're basically saying, because I can't see Raylan Givens working as a florist.
It's crazy, too, because in the first episode after he gets shot, he's so humanized and he's so vulnerable. Because like for the longest time, you've been watching the past two seasons, he's so good with the gun, he's on the mark, he's so methodical in all his strategies. And now like he's been kind of been chopped down in a sense to someone who just, he's so shaky, he's unsure of himself with the first two episodes. It's really kind of cool. At the same time, it's kind of like, okay, can we please get the badass back that we've come to know and love? And that was really cool at the very end with that showdown between him and Ice Pick.
Yeah. Sorry about your tablecloth.
Yeah, that was just so great.
Yeah, it was well done. And
again, how corny is that? The guy uses an ice pick. Then to show that how smart Raylan was when he finally came to realization, he's like, okay, I should probably read this file.
It was just funny. He was like, that's him? I've seen him in the elevator.
Yeah, and he's like staring at him the whole time.
When I saw Quinn come on screen, it just made me think I need to go back and watch Season 6 of Dexter because I still haven't seen it.
I would say you do and you don't. I think the end is definitely worth waiting to get to. There's definitely a good character development of Dexter towards the end of it, but some of it's just kind of like, oh my god. And then, I don't know, Colin Hanks, he does a really good job. And I didn't catch the whole little shocker in the season, but whatever, a lot of people did.
Mm.
Dexter's worth going down the marathon row for, so.
Speaking of which, I didn't mention it, but I have watched all three episodes of Alcatraz. I did want to quickly say, that show's really good.
So far.
And Giacchino does the music, so it feels like Lost. But it is, it looks like it's devolved into a murder of the week kind of thing, where this criminal comes back this week and there's 300 people that can potentially leave. That means they have 300 episodes self-contained if they want to go that route. But there are some other larger things that are happening in the background. And I was wondering, how does Jorge Garcia, how would he fit into the story? And turns out he's a comic book writer who's studied Alcatraz his whole life, written books on it, and writes a comic based on Alcatraz. So it kind of fits these, fat slob, Hurley kind of guy. So his character kind of fits the kind of what you would expect Jorge Garcia to act like on screen. But it's a good show, and it's rating really well in terms of it didn't have a drop-off from viewership from week 1 to 2. And I think that it's got a future. I think Alcatraz and Touch probably have at least 3 seasons in them. So there you go. But that's not what we're talking about. I just want to get it out.
You heard it now, folks. Predicting it right now. 3 seasons of pop.
3 seasons of a movie. No, I don't know. we'll see. But FX is kind of on a roll outside of Unsupervised, which is atrocious. That show's terrible. But most everything else they put out has been good. We already talked about The League. We have mentioned in the past It's Always Sunny. Obviously, I've waxed poetic about what I still think is the best show on that network, which is Sons, and then Justified's right behind it. Those two shows are shows that I go out of my way to pay attention to. and even read articles on when they release. And then, the, you know, half the world loves American Horror Story. I'm not one of those half, so I'll stick with Justified and Sons of Anarchy.
Remind me again in season two during that bank robbery scene why Winona took a $100 bill from the counterfeit bag.
Because she needed money. I mean, I know that sounds dumb. Like, I mean, it sounds too easy, but that is what it was. It has something to do with like a house payment or something like that, that where she really desperately needed money. It's like there was a reason. She didn't just do it to find out if she could or something like that. There was more to it than that.
She got kicked in the face for her efforts, didn't she? So it's all right. I don't know. That whole storyline was kind of weird. One of my other ones, it was season one, episode two, where it was like an old convict escaped through a party and then took Raylan's hat. No, that wasn't that one. Where basically he outsmarted him and locked him hostage in the gas station.
Right.
To go find like his stash, and it was in this like new development suburban home, and he had to go find him down. Another one too was the one where Raylan got his hat stolen.
Yeah, and ended up getting it back at the end.
By beating up those guys in the bar. Because he got put on, he got suspended for something, or I can't remember exactly what it was. I don't know. What are your favorite ones?
The hat.
Tom Friendly?
No.
Come on, man. Tom Friendly did a good job.
I like the Dennis one. The season finale last year, Bloody Harlem, was unbelievable. A lot of stuff with the Bennets was really good. I also was a big fan of, like I said, the coal miner episode. I think that was Cottonmouth. I was a big fan of that. I was also a big fan of the episode that resulted in Rebecca Kreskoff's character trying to make a case for the coal in the church for the town. Mm-hmm. And then Mags Bennett, basically her and Mags going toe-to-toe. That one was good. But the whole deal with them going to the Bennets that were having the big party for the community and all, that's certainly one of the best ones. Season finale, both 1 and 2 were really good. The dentist episode early in the series was good. I thought both of these first two this season have been really good. There's not really any there's only one from last year that wasn't one of my favorites, and there was nothing wrong with it. I just didn't really care, and that was the one that centered on Rachel's storyline.
Right, with her family.
Yeah, and there was nothing really wrong with it. It just didn't really fit the tone of what was going on the rest of it. It felt like it was just kind of out of place.
That she's not too much of a strong character, even though I really do enjoy her on the show. I really like Jacob Pitts, too. I think he's really good on the show. Yeah. And he's good because, one, I remember first seeing him. You know when the thing you do when you first see an actor, and then you see him somewhere else, and you go, wait, where the hell have I seen him? It bothers you. And I remember seeing him for the first time on 21,
right,
where he was a spoiled ex, whatever, player they kicked out because he was just hot-headed,
right,
whatever. And then I see him in this role, and he's completely different. He's got his hair gelled back all slick. He looks older, and he really plays his character really well, being like an ex, like, snipe marksman. And he really does a good job because it was one episode where he walked in with Raylan, and they both had guns on a guy behind a table. And he goes, I got Tim here. He's an ex, you know, army specialist, gives like his whole background. And the guy's like, you're just full of shit. And he keeps rambling. All of a sudden, like, Tim shoots him in the back, like dead on, like exactly where Raylan said he's going to be. He's like, I got my gun. He's like, I'm ready. He just lets it go. I was like, damn, the motherfucker wasn't playing. By the way, we are explicit.
Yeah, thanks.
Oops.
I'm interested to see where this season ends. Like, I certainly want to watch it all transpire, but I'm interested to see where the main characters are at the end of this season. Because I think this is the year where it's likely that at the end of the 13th episode and the end of the season, we're going to see somebody in a much different capacity than they have been recently. So I'm curious to see which character takes that step. Who may leave the show? Who may get killed off the show? Justifies one of those. To me, it's kind of becoming kind of a water cooler show where there's a reason to talk about what's happened to your favorite people or your least favorite people on a weekly basis. It's not a show that you just watch and forget about. It's a show that, you know, has some longevity and has some continuity, and it's similar to Sons of Anarchy and things like that, that there's just a reason to continue to follow these people on screen.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure Natalie Z will get killed off at the end of the season.
Because that would turn Raylan back into the badass, and revenge guy and all that?
I think for me, it would be kind of like that whole Dexter thing. It's like, we need to not have so many emotional ties to this badass character. Kind of like, look at Kiefer Sutherland.
Right.
Okay. When Terry died.
Right.
You know, in his storyline, he gave everything up, and all he had was Kim, and then Kim gave him up, and he kind of just abandoned everything all in hopes. But then
I don't want them to kill Natalie Z off. I really like her a lot.
It's cool. You have Ariel Winter. It's cool. You can watch Modern Family. You got, you know, Claire Dunphy. Just watch that. No one dies on that show. No.
But I want Natalie Z.
It's fine. She'll find other work, I'm sure. You got...
Do you think they have the baby before she dies?
I think maybe she'll be having the baby and she dies? Like something's messed up going to happen? Like maybe Boyd gets to her? Maybe Boyd unleashes that like whole inner like anger from inside Raylan?
I just don't think Boyd's going to be the cause of that. Boyd's more likely the kind of guy that would be at the funeral. Like, on Raylan's side. Like I said, I think those two, they have a love-hate relationship, but at the end of the day, I still believe they'd be best friends if it wasn't for their motivations.
I think it was really cool seeing the teaser preview for episode 3 coming up where the two of them kick down the door and they're shooting side by side with one another. I was like, what? Like, just talk about it. Like, that chemistry between those two really fucking work.
Yeah.
And you make it a good point where you sit over that they're like the Batman and Joker, where they need each other. There's a balance between the two of them. Like, they really, each one of them wouldn't have shit to do. And what's a boy going to do? Run a fucking shitty ass hick town?
Yeah, exactly. I agree. They definitely do need each other. I think maybe we'll see a lighter Raylan that gets turned dark. And if that's what you're basically alluding to, then it would take something major to turn him. And what would be major would be the death of his wife.
You know what another good episode was the one where Dewey impersonates Raylan?
Yeah.
He gets that hat from the gas station. He's like, you tell him Marshall Raylan Givens came here and took your money. And he just like goes around and sleeps with the chicks, the like prostitutes. Who's in the trailer park? So, by the way, I got a friend of mine who is moving to a trailer in a small ass town here soon.
And who was now, a prostitute?
Now, here's the thing. I have no quarrel, nothing wrong with anyone living in a trailer park. That's fine, or in a trailer. I, you know, some trailers are nice, double wise, whatever. Now, if you try and deny where you're living, that's your own problem. He was telling me, he goes, I'm moving to a trailer. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Where is it at? In said city. And he goes, oh, but it's not a trailer park, even though there are other trailers around me.
So it's a trailer gathering?
Community?
Trailer party?
I mean, I don't know. Whatever, to each their own.
There's some really nice trailers. I mean, there's some that are really large and are, like, completely loaded with all this technology and stuff. I'm not assuming that's what this is, but there's different levels of trailer park. I've never had first-hand experience, but I know that they're not all, you know, double-wides that are about to fall over with a tornado that are rusted out and people sitting smoking cigarettes sitting on top of propane tanks and stuff like that.
And propane accessories.
I was thinking Hank Hill, but I wasn't going to say it. There you went, though.
Dewey's definitely one of my favorite characters. He's just so outlandish and just such a retard. I had to hate
so
to use a
ugly
word. He's not. Come on.
It's fugly, dude. I'm serious.
Who's worse, him or Dickie?
It's him, man.
Aww. Arlo?
Jeremy Davies apparently had like a heartthrob community going on when he was on Lost.
Yeah, that is true, because he's a scientist on the show, not Dickie.
Well, no, but, like, I mean, you know, he washed his hair then. Like, wore shirts with ties and not, like, old denim jackets and rolled up stuff with a peg leg.
Was going out with Rebecca Mader on the show.
Mm. So, by the way, Work It got canceled.
Yeah, after two episodes. A friend of mine, Rob, was telling me that he actually went out of his way to purposely watch this show, Work It, because it had been rumored to be so bad, he had to see how bad it was.
He was right.
And then I joked with him. I was like, so you're going to be that guy that when they release Work It, the complete Blu-ray DVD box set, you're going to go get it, aren't you? Because you got to see those, like, unaired 10 episodes. It's kind of like Firefly.
There's not an unaired 10 episodes of Work It.
I'm pretty sure there is. If you go IMDb Work It, each one of the characters are listed for 12 episodes.
Sucks, man. It's like everything Rebecca Mader does go on, it just doesn't end up working out. Like, she was on No Ordinary Family, and that didn't end up lasting. This show was atrocious. Like, the only thing that she really had that worked out was Lost, and they killed her off fast, and she had a minor role in The Devil Wears Prada, and that film did pretty well.
How about she comes on Justified? That would make me feel good.
I still want to see Josh Holloway on Justified, because I think he's made for it.
That would just make sense, wouldn't it?
If not that, then true.
But I don't want to see him as a villain, though, man. He's got to be...
No, he'd be like Raylan's long-lost drinking buddy from Florida. I don't care.
I don't know. Just a cameo somewhere.
What if he was a con man? What if he was a slickster con man?
Because he is a slickster con man.
Got trapped on a mysterious island.
Man, that opening scene of Mission Impossible 4 was so good.
That movie was so good.
Just shows that... Can someone please put him in something?
Yeah, I'd like to see him get a starring role in something.
I don't think he would be the guy to like be the initial moneymaker.
I think he'd have been better as Mitchell McDear than Josh Lucas is, because, God, that show's awful.
They're still going to do a full season, though, from what I hear.
I know. I was so excited. I was, like I said, I've said on previous podcasts, I love that book and love the music, particularly the piano music that was used for the soundtrack of the original film. This show's dismal. It's terrible. The acting's bad. Like, the storyline's awful. It's a mystery. It's a case of the week, like Law and Order, and then they throw this, you know, evil law firm that's trying to take him down or whatever like that at the end of it. And Trisha Helfer's on it, and apparently she can't do anything that sticks around for a long time either.
Man,
freaking in love with her, like everybody.
Speaking of Josh Holloway, I really hope someone, a casting agent somewhere, gets out this message and hears and puts Josh Holloway in something. Apparently, in IMDb, the only thing he's going to be doing soon is a terrible, terrible movie that's starring Josh Peck and Chris Brown called Planet B-Boy.
Chris Brown, like...
On a scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah, that's what
American B-Boy crew heads to France to compete in the Battle of the Year International Championships. That's right.
Josh Holloway's not in that.
Yes, he is. Go IMDb him.
I can't, because I don't want to believe it.
That's so terrible. Like, why?
What's the advantage to doing that?
To get your name out there, I guess. I don't know. How do you fall off that fast? It's beyond me.
Well, it's not even that. It's just he was typecast as Sawyer and really didn't do anything else. And some of the other ones fell into stuff. Like, Evangeline fell into Real Seal, which came out on Blu-ray and DVD this week. Matthew Fox had a couple of movies going on. He was in Vantage Point and some
Speed
other stuff.
Racer.
Yeah, he was in those, and now he's got some fairly big project on the way, which I was interested to see that he was in, because it's something I really like a franchise I already liked a long time ago, but I can't remember now what it is.
I'd say Terry Quinn's now on Y5O.
Like, 3 episodes a year.
Whatever. Good enough.
He should be on Alcatraz. That's my personal opinion.
The other guy, he's on Vampire Diaries.
Yeah, Boone?
Yep.
Yeah, he's... I can't remember his name, but he's a major star now. People freaking... Apparently that show has a wild following. I just can't get it. I just can't sit down and watch that show.
I don't like seeing Henry Ian Cusick clean-shaven. Something about it just bothers me. I was like, no, you need a beard.
That's it. Ian Somerhalder. That's his name.
I was like, you really need a beard. He's in a show now called Scandal.
Where's that on?
Beats the hell out of me.
It's like Justified brings on people here and there, but it's pretty much that seven people that are on it all the time. And that seven people is really probably enough that are on it right now.
Speaking of too many people on a show, man, what the hell is Law and Order SVU doing? They had like two new like no name people coming out of nowhere, or the chick that was, what was that show? It was on NBC one year during one of the failing hero seasons that people were all over.
Bionic Woman?
No. Why would you remind me of that? Like, that's not nice.
Journeyman?
No, Kelly Giddish. She was on another law show right before she got on this show. It was, what was it called? Pulling It Up. Not The Good Wife. She was on that too, apparently. Chase.
Oh, God.
Hey, man, people like that show for whatever reason. And you know what?
I already watch a show about a U.S. Marshal, and it's a really good one. It's the one we've been talking about for the last 30 minutes.
And?
I don't want to watch Chase. Every time I saw, like, any trailer for it, it looked absolutely horrific.
By the way, I'm pretty sure Richard Belzer is going to die on SVU. Like, I mean, like, literally, he will die in real life.
Who joined SVU this year?
Dying in that role. I don't know. He's all decrepit looking.
No, I saw it in the trailer. Who joined it that replaced D'Onofrio? Like, the main person. And somebody I was like, who? Why did they do that?
Who? Vincent D'Onofrio?
Wasn't that the main guy outside Heart Attack?
No, he's CI.
Okay, you're right.
CI got canceled, if I'm not mistaken. Right, but
the guy who was main.
Christopher Maloney.
Yeah, Maloney, that's it. Yeah, I got him mixed up. But there's somebody that replaced him, and I was like, what?
Well, no, the chick from Chase and another young guy, they came in to kind of be backup replacements.
No, but
in case.
Now there's like a main star that's like a musician or something.
No, it's that's what I was getting to. It's Harry Connick Jr.
That's it. I was just
Harry
like,
Connick
what?
Jr. joins SVU.
Continuing his movie career from Hope Floats.
Hey, he had other great hits.
Like, I don't have a problem with Harry Connick Jr. It's just like, Harry Connick Jr. joins SVU.
He was in Iron Giant. Come on, give him some credit.
And it's day.
Yeah. 16 years ago.
Speaking of NBC, Whitney, go away. Are You There, Chelsea? Really go away. Up All Night moved to Thursdays after The Office. It's a perfect spot for it. Up All Night's really good, and it's gotten even better.
When the hell does Community come back?
They don't have a date. They're not sure. Well, but they said they promise it will come back. It's going to come back in, like, April on Saturday nights. Watch. But they said now that it ended up on the front of TV Guide or whatever, that they may even renew it. That it's actually now that it's fairly likely it's going to get renewed for a full fourth season. Because critics like it. I'm like, well, if the critics like it, why don't you advertise it right and put it when people will watch it, like not against the Big Bang Theory.
I'm about to say, what do you do? Compete it on Saturday nights against Rules of Engagement reruns?
I wouldn't put it on Saturday because a lot of people don't watch. I mean, television Saturday night ratings are always brutal. Nobody's watching TV on Saturdays. But give it a chance to shine. Put it against something else. Don't put it against Big Bang. A lot of people that watch Big Bang also watch Community. So give them a chance to watch both shows. I mean, 30 Rock's now against the Big Bang, and like five people now watch 30 Rock. Because Big Bang had its biggest ratings ever this past week. It continues to grow. It actually had higher ratings this week than American Idol did. That is ridiculous.
Good sign?
Yeah, I mean, I like where the show is right now, too. I like what Big Bang has done this season as a whole. I've really liked. They got rid of Priya, which was really the only problem I had with last year, and now they're finally, here comes Leonard and Penny back together, and that's what they need to do, and then just leave it alone. But there have been some good Sheldon and Amy moments, and some good Bernadette Howard stuff, and then Raj having the like creepy relationship with Siri on his iPhone Thursday night was one of the funniest things I've seen in a long time.
Spoiler alert, thanks a lot, I didn't see it yet. Anyway,
it was on the show, I figure you saw it during the championship game.
Do you think they're going to do one of those things, though, with a lot of sitcoms, and let's loop back to Justified with this, where a character on the show is going to get pregnant? Like, could you see that with Leonard and Penny?
I could see Bernadette.
That's what I was thinking, but that's kind of too easy because they've already gotten to the point of they're going to get engaged, they're going to get married. I don't think that would be a huge shocker because, whatever, that's inevitable. But I think, what if that happened with, like, Leonard and Penny? Let's say they get back on track. Let's say they do have complications, and then that ball drops. What do you think about that? Like, do you think shows do that too often? Hence, How I Met Your Mother.
It's something that every show ends up doing when they run out of ideas. So you would kind of hope they wouldn't do it. What would be funny is they did it with Sheldon and Amy. That would be funny. That would actually be very entertaining to watch. I don't think Leonard and Penny having a baby is anything that they really need to worry about right now. I mean, let them be back together and be happy and don't have this cliffhanger crap where you try to bring somebody else in or have them have problems or have Will Wheaton split them up.
Or bring back Zach.
Yeah, just any of that. Like, no reason for any of that. Let those two be happy and move on from it. It was better when they were happy and they weren't the focus of the drama. Let them kind of be a team the way Jim and Pam are and let the show focus on everybody else.
Everyone else on that show has a steady. Do you see them doing that with Raj, or do you kind of like leave
it
alone?
Yeah, steady as Siri. I'm just kidding. But he's steady for a week with Siri, but he's having these moments now where he's in his own apartment or whatever, and you'll see him saying, why do women not like me? And stuff like that. Like, he's really trying hard. And I think that because they've done so much through the years of him striking out, that they're just waiting for a moment to where they can do it. But the problem is, then everybody's in a relationship, and that's not the way life works. Like, that's way too cliche. Like, Raj kind of has to be the guy that's continually the sad sack, because Howard's got a woman. Leonard, I think, is about to have a woman forever. And Sheldon and Amy are probably going to be together for a while. So it's like, do they all just need a relationship? Then it becomes a completely different show. And I don't think that really can
couples.
Happen. Right. Like, there's no real good. There has to be a Ted Mosby.
Which, man, I need to catch up on that, because I'm hoping it got better from where I left off. So, but anyway, back to Justify. So with the whole Natalie Z being pregnant, do you think that was kind of early for that?
No, because the whole point of the pregnancy was to make them closer, because they had had all these problems. That I don't think Justified is about Raylan and Winona. I think that it's about Raylan's psyche and what takes place within his life that drives the decisions he makes professionally and personally. And I think that when you take her and get her pregnant or whatever, that can get that kind of out of the way and have him go back to what people – I mean, people generally watch Justified most of the time for the crime side of it. And then everything else just should fall into place and not be continual drama, which is why I'm glad that they didn't bring Carla Gugino in there just to try and get between him and Winona. At least they haven't yet. They had that little moment where she was unhappy to see he was with somebody, but I'm glad they didn't try and do that. There's no reason for that. So I don't think it's necessarily too short, because it wasn't – we weren't waiting for Jim and Pam for 6 years to get married and have a baby. That's not really what Justified's about. You kind of want to see him and Winona just stick it out and be together, and if they have a kid, there'll just be a little bit of humor there, some levity. But no, I don't think it's too soon, because it's a different kind of show.
Do you think they're doing the whole Dexter route?
I don't think –
No,
I'm
do you really believe like maybe she'll
kill her off?
I like Winona a lot more than I like Rita.
Yeah, particularly later Rita.
But there's a lot of ag. But there's differences between the hero of Dexter and the hero of Raylan. Raylan is a lawman that does things most of the time the right way, whereas Dexter's, you know, got two kind of identities, and he's, you know, protecting his other, you know, facade.
Dexter's Batman with lethal tendencies.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and there's some similarities, I guess, between the two shows. If I could have only watched one of the shows, I would pick Justified, even though it's a shorter sample size. I've had more fun watching Justified at this point than I have Dexter.
Dexter this season really did irk me sometimes during the season, just with some of the topics they had at hand. And again, some of the episodes kind of seem long, because, I mean, they are technically, because, you know, it's on Showtime, so they can extend it all the way to the 58, 59-minute mark, whereas Justified is still the traditional show. It's like 44, 45 minutes.
Right.
But still, even though it's like 10 minutes less, it's just the pacing of Justified is still well done, according, you know, compared to a lot of shows. Like Mad Men sometimes me drags on a little too long in certain episodes, and I cringe with certain people when I see them on screen, especially, and I hate to say this again, but January Jones. I just wish, why couldn't they have gotten someone else to play January Jones' character, Betty?
Speaking of Mad Men, Season 5 premieres March 25th, two-hour premiere, first ever two-hour Mad Men. That will be 9 p.m. Eastern on AMC, and I am counting the seconds to that show.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, you're right. There's nobody on Justified that upsets me to see on screen. I like all seven of the people. Tim's not really a big role, neither is Rachel, but they do their part. They show up here and there in key roles. Like, Rachel had kind of a good role in this past episode. But the show's really driven by Raylan, Art, Ava, Winona, and Boyd. And all of them have stories that are interesting on the side. And yeah, I mean, then you got Dewey and a couple of other little people on the outside, but they don't dwell on them. There's no Angel and La Guerta on this show. Or something like that, where I just don't care.
Or like The Office, where there's just too many side characters.
But that show's actually still been pretty strong this year.
This season's been really strong. Last season, not so much. Last season, aside from the Michael like big revelations and growing up episodes, like those are really good. But aside from that, like this show's been kind of off and on here and there. But this season's really impressed me, and I like a lot of the dynamics between all the characters. Especially, like, have you watched recently?
I've seen them all.
Okay, so the trivia episode.
Yeah, it was great.
And then the beginning of that one with the whole silent, like going along without making a noise. Kevin's like, you hear the rapper? Oh, yeah. Like, oh, come on!
Then he puts it back in his mouth again. Oh, yeah.
Like, I knew it the minute I heard the rapper.
Even the pool party at Robert's house.
Oh, God, where they all got naked? That shit was terrible.
Well, the part of the end, but interesting thing that they're doing with Aaron and Andy. This is a situation, though, where I'd rather them just put those two happy kids together and leave it alone and not be all awkward with it. Although I thought it was cool that Dwight showed a moment of humanity when he just basically told Andy he was an idiot because he didn't see what Aaron was doing.
Right.
Like, Dwight stepped away from being an asshole and was basically like, you do get that this chick really likes you, right?
Like, well, the thing is weird because because his girlfriend was a Julie, something like that. Mm-hmm. She's not like a bad person. It's not like
we want to see him together because we want to see Aaron.
It's not like Roy and Pam.
No,
you know, where like Roy was a dick, and you're like, why is you know? It's like with Julie, she's like,
it's traffic light.
It's a shame, right?
Yeah, it is. All right, go back to where you were.
By the way, if they ever put that on DVD, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, get it for $20. I'm sure at a local Walmart, Target near you. It's worth it sometimes. Except for, what's her name? Kaylee or Caitlin?
Oh, God.
Her sister?
The one that ended up on Free Agents with Hank Azaria?
Yeah. That one.
Yeah, that was awful.
Man, how long did Free Agents last? 3 episodes?
2.
Oof. Can't get past 2? Oof, that's pathetic.
Hank Azaria's like, so I'm just a voice? They're like, yeah, you're just a voice. Go talk to Mark Hamill.
Pretty much. But at least I think in Hank Azaria's like defense, he's done a lot longer and a lot more experience. I forget like how crazy like in shape that guy is.
Yeah,
it's like nuts. I forget about that because you never see him on screen too much unless he's doing something like outlandish comedic role.
But he's done a couple of like ladies' man roles and some thrillers and movies with some like super hot actresses like Paget Brewster. Some of these people that are just drop dead gorgeous, and you're like. You see it, and you're like, Hank Azaria and Paget Brewster? How does that work? Then you see him, and you're like, oh, okay, I forgot. Hank Azaria is like, you know, sculpted man or whatever. Like, that's the way they try to portray it out or whatever.
He's the cards. He's the carrot top of voice actors.
And he plays cards.
Yeah, and I respect that. I do. Unlike Tobey Maguire and his little, like, scandal he got involved with, we paid out, like, $500,000 to keep everyone shut. So. Good job there, Spider-Man. Fail. Anyway.
Former Spider-Man?
Well, whatever. I'm pretty sure Garland's going to knock that out of the roof compared to him. So, I'm very excited for The Amazing Spider-Man. I am not excited still for that suit. That suit still bothers the shit out of me.
Have you seen it where he's not wearing the mask? Have you seen some of the newer photos?
Yeah, I have.
They're not that good. They still look weird.
Again, he just needs to eat a damn cheeseburger or pizza, man. Or like, you're in New York. Something. You say Twinkie?
I said or 20.
They said Twinkie, like freaking Zombieland.
I saw like 20. Yeah, I saw a Zombieland ad on TV, and I saw it 20, like 20 pizzas.
Are they still making a Zombieland 2?
Maybe? I don't know.
Okay, so they can't make a Zombieland 2, but they're going to make a Hangover 3?
Did you ever see Hangover 2?
Nope. Did you?
Yeah, I saw it first night, midnight premiere. Is worth seeing. It's not worth caring very much.
Is it on DVD yet?
Yeah, it's been out. It came out right before Christmas.
Oh, God. That shows how much I give a shit.
Yeah, it's still worth watching. It has some good moments. Is it Hangover? No. What was the best comedy last year? Bridesmaids. And congratulations to both Kristen Wiig for a screenplay nomination and Melissa McCarthy, who got nominated for Best Supporting Actress for that film and deserved it. And I'm very happy to see that they gave her that kind of award. The stuffed shirt Academy Awards crowd nominated her for Best Supporting Actress.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. And Bridesmaids was awesome.
And she's nominated again for an Oscar, I think.
That's what I was just saying, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Golden Globes. Sorry.
That's the Academy Awards she was nominated for. She won Golden Globes, right?
Octavia Spencer won.
Yeah, no, there was two. There's comedy and drama at the
oh, okay.
at the Golden Globes.
I don't know. I think she did win.
No, I don't think it was. I think it was Berenice Bejo that won for The Artist. And she is not only just beautiful, but really great in that movie.
Speaking of which, I need to wrap this up here soon because I got to go and meet up with my wonderful girlfriend to go watch The Artist. So, final words on Justified. What do you look to impact on season 3, and what do you think it's going to go?
It's going to be drastically different by the end of this season than it is at the beginning. Season 2, a lot happened, but Raylan didn't seem to change dramatically. Something major is going to happen here that I think is going to shift the way his character behaves. Boyd's going to toe the line, but I think he's going to be more basically basic villain this time all the way through, but still have the same kind of relationship with Raylan. Somehow the two will get entangled in the finale, probably on the same side to some capacity, kind of how they've kind of been on both sides during during the two finales previous, where they've kind of had conflicting thought processes or whatever. I wouldn't be surprised if your prediction about Winona is correct. I hope it's not, but because if they did that, I kind of wish they'd wait another year to do that. Doesn't seem like the Justified seasons take all that long. If that's the case, then I don't see how she could have the baby by the end of this year unless they speed a timeline further than they seem to have in the past. And I think Dickie will be dead in the next month.
Could you see this then? Could you see it where it kind of ends up like 24, where Raylan being the good guy would eventually either go in as a fugitive or go on the run or go in hiding and then just pop up and then try to reclaim what is his kind of thing?
Well, why would he go in hiding?
I don't know. Look at Jack Bauer. Just saying, you know, he went in hiding, what, twice, three times during the eight-year run?
I mean, there's a possibility of that because you keep hearing Art. Art always tells other people about this one troubled guy that continues to get himself into bad situations. It's like Art's kind of his father, really, because his father's not his father. Art's kind of really his moral compass or whatever. So I'm not sure, but they could do that because they keep alluding to him having trouble. At some point, Justified has to have this moment where Oliphant does something that's not justified, and that could come now. I think either they'll have the baby, somebody major will die, or Raylan's going to do something very controversial. One of those three things I think probably ends this season. But regardless, both Andy and I highly suggest that if you haven't been watching, that you catch up. I think it's on Netflix now, but however you need to see it, on demand or whatever, go back and watch it from the beginning. The first season is very entertaining. You get to know the characters in terms of how they're going to act and their motivations to some extent without a lot of depth into one particular story. It's a bunch of different little stories, and then season 2, it really ramps up. But it was one of the best 5 by far last year on TV. Tomorrow night, by the way, Luck premieres. We'll get out of here on this. Luck finally premieres. It's the same pilot that they ran as a sneak at the end of last year. Luck's getting crazy great reviews, of course. It's probably going to have multiple Golden Globe and Emmy nods going forward. And before Luck, HBO is premiering the full-on 3-minute season 2 Game of Thrones trailer that they've been talking about now for the past 4 weeks that they're basically saying is one of the best just advertisements they've ever done. And HBO generally does the best advertisements on all of TV, in my opinion. So I can't wait to see what they do. And then Game of Thrones season 1 comes out of Blu-ray about a month. It's like early March or whatever. And then season 2 premieres a couple of weeks after. But Luck is something that if you have HBO, you should watch. If not, you should maybe have a friend that has HBO and you should watch, because 10 episode first season, same way as Game of Thrones. Most people, I saw the pilot and thought it was great, so I'm really looking forward to continuing to watch that and seeing where it grows. Got, you know, cast to spare. We didn't mention this earlier. Nick Nolte nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Warrior.
Good job.
Yes, I was disappointed that Albert Brooks was overlooked for Drive. A lot of people were, actually. It was named the biggest snub this year. Gosling wasn't nominated for anything, which was shocking. And I actually think that both Tom Hardy or particularly the other guy whose name escapes me right now.
Joel Edgerton?
Yeah, I think Edgerton particularly could have been seen in a different light. But the thing about Warrior was, and I read this in a couple of the preview columns for the Oscars, Warrior caught everybody off guard because everybody thought the same thing, and then they saw it and they're like, holy shit, this movie's incredible.
Yeah, it's not The Fighter. And it sucks when those movies that come out when other huge movies, a.k.a. Harry Potter, are out, that people just forget. Like, it just really goes under the radar. And but again, if you have any, I don't know, desire, or you like MMA, or you like, even if you don't like MMA, I mean, in your case, you don't like MMA, but you gave the movie a shot because of my recommendation, and you were very surprised. And again, like, I don't know, from the get-go, I wanted to see it, but I didn't want to see it in theater. I just didn't have the time. And I was glad the way the movie turned out the way it was, because it was more than just your simple, you know, meathead Rocky movie. There was a lot of good stuff in the whole movie, and there's a lot of good controversy, darkness, and it was great. A great acting on everyone's part that was in the movie. And plus, you get to see Jennifer Morphin's butt in it, and, you know, just saying.
Academy Awards, led by Hugo with 11 nominations. I love that movie. I've talked about it in previous podcasts. Artist was second with 10 nominations. I've gushed over that on blog, on Twitter, on Facebook. Ever since I saw it last week, I own the soundtrack. It's amazing. I may actually go see that again, either tonight or tomorrow. It's actually now here in town, so I don't have to make a long drive to see it. I can see that and The Descendants open here and go watch those both again. And then the third in nominations was The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo with 9. You've heard me wax about that forever. So if The Artist is around you, it has opened wide now, but if you're in a very small town or something that's not around you, maybe try to make a trip. It's worth making the trip. I drove, you know, 70 miles to see that and The Descendants back-to-back, and it was one of the best decisions I ever made. And The Artist was just fantastic, and you're not going to see anything like that again. I've never seen anything like it in my entire life. It was so just beautifully unique that my co-host needs to get to it. So we're going to go ahead and end this thing right now. CTRpod@gmail.com or CTRpodcast on Twitter. You can follow him at Avan360, me at JMart100. We are going to expand out in the next couple of weeks and hopefully get that site up as we have promised. Start doing a little bit more content on the web. And again, in about 2 weeks, we're going to sit down with author Brian Dole to talk about the Solstice Chronicles and his take on the upcoming Academy Awards, as he's a major film buff, particularly the higher class stuff. So it'll be a perfect time to sit down and talk with him. And hopefully by then, Andy will have seen a few more of these films, as he's going to do tonight. But I am going to read Catching Fire now, because I finished The Hunger Games last weekend. And now that my first week of class is done, I've got time to sit down and do that. So I'm going to continue reading that so I can have all three of them read by the time the film releases in a couple of months. I can tell you this, that book is awesome. If you haven't read The Hunger Games, you should go out of your way to do so. So that's me. I'm Jason Martin again in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And I'm going to turn it over to my co-host, who is chilling in Simpsonville, probably scrambling to put on some pair of shoes before he walks out to meet his lady for the film.
I just got to put on some shoes so I can walk around and take a major whiz, because doing this for 2 hours really drains you. But again, yes, I am Andrew Van of Simpsonville, South Carolina, with my co-host, Jason Martin, of the Certified Total Recall podcast. This has been episode 9,927, somewhere around that line.
Actually, I think it is 27.
All right, well, I was close. But again, find us at asset listed spots, as Jason said. And ladies and gentlemen, have a great night. We out.
Or a great morning. Or a great afternoon.
Whatever. Side.